Welcome to the Blackout Show, presented by The Guillen Grid, a show about the Chicago White Sox baseball, the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll debate what's working and what's not on the south side of Chicago. It's old school versus new school baseball. And most importantly, we're keeping all the receipts.
What is up, everybody? It is Justin Lee, myself, and our friend of the show, Elijah Evans from Just Baseball and Future Sox. Before I toss it over to Jay, Elijah, just tell us really quickly how many things you put out there since this show has since this deal has gone down. Tell me exactly how much content you've been putting out there.
That's a good question, man. I think I've got a newsletter, an article, probably about 10 or so tweets, two podcasts. This is podcast number 3. We're going to keep rolling from there.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, hopefully I get the best out of you. That's my main goal out of this.
100%.
Justin, you said something that really pissed me off on the phone earlier. Go ahead, Justin. Tell me exactly your spiel of this deal. And okay. I'm going to put the banner up.
Is it rhyme time, Gonzo?
It's rhyme time. Go for it, bro.
Okay. So first of all, I want to say congratulations, Chris Getz. You've won a trade. I was really scared that you were going to botch this because we don't really have any assets to where we could just be at the bargaining table dealing willy-nilly. Like, we got to thread the needle with this Garrett Crochet trade. And the key part is fitting the timeline. Like, I'm a casual fan. So when I see prospects, you know, getting thrown around names and trades, I'm thinking, okay, when's the next time this guy is going to make me, you know, pick him up in fantasy? When is he going to have some relevance? I'm thinking of 2026, 2027. You net me Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to disrespect Chase Madron, but all I needed to see was Braden Montgomery. The lumber talks. Now, Gonzo, you mentioned before, I pissed you off. I believe Kyle Teal wasn't traded here to be a catcher for the Chicago White Sox. I believe there's a chance that Kyle Teal starts more games in a corner outfield position, hopefully for my sake, left field. I think Jesse Barfield has an opportunity to turn Kyle Teal into a poor man's Kyle Tucker. He could be, you know, a lesser Sean Green. There's some good value there. I think Edgar Quero is the catcher for this organization going forward. And I think that we have the keys. You have two left-handed thumper bats. I know Kyle Teal is not going to help us in the power department, probably 15, 20 home runs if we're lucky. But Braden Montgomery, he could knock the cover off the ball. Like, you have it. Those are bats that can accelerate your development process and your growth. So me personally, Gonzo, I was okay with the trade. I can go to sleep at night knowing me being that's my step team, the Red Sox. Garrett Crochet is going to toe the slab for them. If he could give them 200 innings, Gonzo, they're winning 90 plus games regardless. So that's in there. I have an opportunity to look at the new generation, another perpetual rebuild for a Chicago fan base. Sure, okay, fine. Let's just watch the kids incubate. Let's see what we got. At the end of the day, we're not trying to win a World Series next year, Eli. But I'm going to kick it to you. But Gonzo, I'm happy. Give me Kyle Teal. Give me Braden Montgomery. You know, and Gonzalez could throw a fucking baseball through a brick wall. I don't think people understand that. Walks are a little bit high, but I don't care. Give me the upside on the arm. What say you, Eli?
Yeah, guys, you know, I think at first I saw this deal break and I thought Kyle Teal headliner, what are we doing here? Like, let's deepen, you know, what's going on here? You got Caro, who's ready to be the catcher, right? Like, why is this the headline package? Then I see the full deal. I start to see, I see Brandon Montgomery, of course. I see Chase Meadroth, who is kind of that, you know, that piece you can play now. I think there was always going to be a piece that was league ready in this deal, right? I think with the Crochet deal, you wanted to get one guy that you can put in your lineup today in opening day and say, hey, you're a piece that we can have in our lineup for 2025, the entire season, and you have a chance to become a big league regular, right? I don't think Meadroth is necessarily an elite high upside big league player, but he's going to give you good at bats. He has an exceptionally good walk rate and very rarely chases. And that's a guy you can put in your lineup immediately. The first two, though, is where it's really made, right? Like, you had to get guys that are impact players at the big league level. When I thought about it more and I really dove into it, I don't care that Kyle Teal is a catcher. First of all, the major league landscape right now, catching is at a really low point. There's a handful of elite catchers and a bunch of catchers who are really eh. There's a lot of eh catchers around Major League Baseball right now. Having two top 50 catching prospects in baseball is a great luxury to have, and it puts the White Sox in a situation where you can let both these guys develop, but if one of them excels more than the other one in terms of their defense, right, you can allow that person to be the primary catcher, but you're able to just tandem these guys, right? Like, there's no downside in having a tandem of catchers where one of them can play first, one of them can DH, they can kind of split the time at catcher. If one starts to really excel defensively, that guy can become the primary defensive guy, the other one can become the backup, right? It just creates a level of versatility at a position that is so weak around the league that I'm okay with it. And it took me a few hours and thinking and really kind of looking at the deal to think about that. But I think ultimately having two elite catchers is not going to be a bad situation. And we still don't know how they'll develop at the major league level, right? So I'm okay with that. And then when you pair that with the upside star outfielder that the White Sox needed to add to the system, you needed at this trade, you had to add an outfielder that you can look at and say, hey, you can be a star in the outfield for us. And that's Brandon Montgomery. There's a long way to go. He has not played a single minor league game, right? He broke the ankle last year in the College World Series, but like, this is a guy who I thought the White Sox had a very good chance of taking at the fifth overall pick last year, especially before his injury, right? I think if Brandon Montgomery doesn't get hurt, there's a chance he actually ends up going five to the White Sox over a Hayden Smith, right? So now you were able to get two first round picks in a row, essentially, right? These are two guys that I wanted the White Sox to take both in 2023 and 2024. So they're two players that you could have had, or they missed out on Kyle Teal by two picks. He ended up going two picks ahead of them in 2023 when I really wanted Kyle Teal, and he went right before the White Sox pick. And then Montgomery, who the White Sox seriously considered taking at five. So essentially, you now have two first round picks from both the last two drafts in this farm system, and guys that you really, really like moving forward, in addition to a Meadroth who will play tomorrow and will start for the White Sox this season, and a Gonzalez who has the stuff in the White Sox organization to really develop the way the White Sox have been developing pitchers recently. So overall, I was surprised at first, is what I'll say, but the value is there, and I think it is an appropriate trade. I don't think it blew the White Sox away. Yes, it would have been awesome if they were like, if, you know, there was a deal that included Mayer and Montgomery and someone else, or, you know, what was it? I mean, yeah, Roman Anthony would have been awesome, but that was never happening, right? Like, you know, there's other layers to it, but when it comes to the value, it was a pretty appropriate deal, and I'm really happy about these two guys being the co-headliners of this deal.
So I just want to ask Gonzo, take this deal and then line it up next to the Eric Fetty deal. Are you exponentially happier with this deal of Crochet? You feel like we got an adequate return?
Yeah, no, I feel overall, because again, we're looking for the quality and quantity of the value here, and you got two really high ranked guys, and I think Elijah, how you said it best, with back to back drafts, like both of those guys were guys that were lined up to be in that range where you potentially could have had them originally. And if you told me, I know I tweeted this, but if you told me going or coming out of this offseason that we got both Montgomery and Smith in the same draft class, one way, shape, or another, I would have been just amazed with that.
That's a win.
That's a win. So, agreed. Yeah, and I think that's a great, Justin, great way to phrase that question, because I thought about how I would have rather seen at least this setup of the trade. I mean, I know I've fired away at several different packages of Boston and other teams, but altogether, I'm taking that every day. And I do feel that this was the best option out there, definitely with the right team. And I think overall, I don't think anyone else was probably as close as to what Boston just gave to us. And we'll get into a little bit of that later. But if I could tweak it up, I would love to tweak it up, because instead of Teal, I mean, I know Elijah, you know me, we went back and forth on Twitter already about this, but I'd rather have Campbell over Teal. And then down that list with Gonzalez.
I think if Crochet was younger and we had, and yeah, Boston Woods get more control, maybe Campbell would have been on the table. I think with Crochet's age, I don't think that was a question.
I don't really believe the reports that he was off the table, because originally the rumors was, when they were talking about Abreu, was that Campbell, the only one that was off the list was Anthony, and the other prospect or the other top four were available. So I felt originally that Campbell was available, so I just don't believe that he wasn't. But I don't know, like, the depth of that deal, what made it, you know, where he was left off the table. But if I were to go back to it, Gonzalez around that same ranking, at least on their side, I mean, they probably have it differently, but Peyton Toll, who they just drafted in this past draft, was a lefty. I would rather switch in that deal. I mean, don't get me wrong, guy, a right-hander, I mean, we hear all the time, guys, he can throw up to 100, but the control issues is there. I can find that anywhere, right? I mean, we just traded fucking, what was the reliever to Seattle that I liked last year?
Santos.
Yeah, we traded Santos away. It was like same thing. High velocity, control issues. We can find that anywhere, right? But a lefty with the stuff that Toll has, I would have rather seen him in that deal.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not going to take away anything from this deal. But I do want to go into this just so everyone knows. All right, so we got Kyle Teal. He was their fourth in their system. Braden Montgomery, who was fifth. The infielder Medroth was 11th. And then Gonzalez was 14th. That is the whole package in this deal. And I want to start this off with talking about Kyle Teal first. It was really interesting because it goes with what Justin was saying. And Chris Getz verbatim said that catching is gold in this game right now, and stated the belief that both can be big league catchers for Sox. We'll see if it plays out that way. Teal played other positions in college. And I thought that was a huge thing to add in there at the end of that quote, because it goes along with what Justin was saying. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, right? You want both of these guys to hit, and then they can make that competition, who's the better man to take it, and then we'll find, you know, the position for the other. Or you can do what the Dodgers did recently.
But the Smith thing is, and
mix and match catcher and DH.
Sure.
You could go either way, but then again, maybe neither hit, or one hits and the other doesn't. But regardless, if this is a – let's just hope for the best, right? Both hit. Cuero stays a catcher. Teal goes out.
Can play anywhere. The field.
And that's what Justin is saying, which I didn't really think about the way he's bringing it up, because it does make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
– yeah.
I don't know if I see Teal as an outfielder. I think that was a little bit of an ambitious thought that it was getting passed around today, just from like, oh, he's played a little outfield in the past. Like, I'm not saying it can't happen, but like, let's not act like the White Sox are set at first base or DH, guys. Like, they're not, obviously. So like, you know, there's definitely, I think there's a possibility a corner outfield could be in play, but I also think like, if these two hit the way they could hit, right? Like, and it's still, you know, like you said, Gonzo, like it's a big if, right? Of course it's an if at all. It's always an if guys will translate and their game will show at the highest level. But at the same time, like both these guys, you could easily run a platoon at catcher with both them getting reps, either of them getting reps at first or DH, whatever it might be. And I think it works regardless. Ultimately, you got to go for talent, and they were able to get two big talents in this, aside from where the exact positional fit will be.
Yeah, and I think, like, at the end of the day, look at the problem the White Sox have. We have two great catchers with a young guy and Corey Lee ahead of them already. Obviously, we know the White Sox believe that, you know, Teal or Cuero will be the one overtaking them. But at the end of the day, look at the talent boost. Like, when's the last time we had that level of talent at that position at that age?
AJ was the only, well, not even at that age. So, yeah.
Exactly. Nobody. So we're starting to incubate competition.
Can I interest you guys in a Zach Collins?
Yeah. Hey, his walk-up song was the best. He had Toby Keith. I'm not going to lie.
But yeah, you're exactly right. And ultimately, I don't – personally, I've never – like, I mean, me and Gonzo, like you said earlier, like, I'm a little bit hesitant on a Christian Campbell just because you're seeing him have such a rapid ascent as opposed to a guy like a Teal who we know was a first-round talent, dominated in college. Like, there's a lot to that, right? So I think – I would have been okay either way. I would have liked the deal either way, honestly. But at the same time, I really like both these players. Again, these are guys that I wanted the White Sox to draft the past 2 years. Like they were on the top of my target board. Of like, these are the guys at these picks I would love to see the White Sox draft. So really you're getting two first round picks in addition to a league ready infielder and an arm that you can mess around with. So from a value standpoint, it's a good deal. I think it's not like the blow your socks off deal. I don't think it's a deal that I looked at and I was like, oh my God, Chris Getz, like that's the best deal I've seen in ever, you know, it's not that type of deal, but it's definitely not a deal you're upset about going into next season, because you look at this farm system, guys. Oh man. I mean, I think it's pretty consensus top five in baseball now. And I think it's borderline top three. I mean, I think you can make a case the Sox system now after this trade is top three in baseball. I think it's definitely top five. And I think, you know, if there's a few more moves that come in, obviously this is a whole nother, you know, episode probably, but Luis Robert, we'll see what happens there. But if Luis Robert gets moved, you're looking at another, you know, impact legit player coming back to the system as well. So I think this is a farm system that is very good. It's gone from getting there a year ago to pretty good this, you know, going into this past season to very solid at the deadline. And now to like, this is a top system in baseball. So, you know, it's going to take time, obviously. And I know White Sox fans are still going to be angry and pessimistic like they always are, but there's a lot of pieces in place. And now you just got two big bats, which you needed to balance out the level of pitching talent.
Yeah. To be honest, like, even though I really wanted Campbell, right? Didn't get him. The fact that Teal, I mean, think about it like this way. If you're focusing is right up the middle of the diamond, right, you can't go wrong with having depth there at the catching spot to solidify that position at the very least. But also, I wanted to bring up a point here with TJ Stats put out his, you know, Kyle Teal graph that he always does, and it was interesting seeing that he had a 16.3%.
Can you block Ralph Daniels, please?
He had a 16.3% walking rate, and that we've seen that trend this offseason is that walk rate being a focus. And then he was in the 90th percentile with the exit velocity, which was quite interesting to see. So as far as Teal goes, very solid get there. I'm going to transition to Braden Montgomery. To me, I mean, you saw it right off the bat with earlier in the beginning of these rumors in November, it was the Willie Abreu talk. Then this Braden Montgomery, he is, you just got that version of Abreu, but with a higher ceiling. A two-way player.
Bro.
And for me, this was my main focus. I put out there, I either want Campbell or I want Montgomery. I need one of those two if I'm coming out of a deal with Boston. And I got Braden Montgomery. Would love to have both. I mean, but that's not the case.
Because you're a greedy pig.
Regardless, that's a guy who, before that hamstring injury, he was the best of the class at the time. So if you told me, and I brought this up in the pre-show, but if you told me that we're coming out of this offseason with Smith and Montgomery in the same draft class, I'm stoked about that. And one way, shape, or form, it happened. And granted, there's multiple position players there originally that you would have wanted, but you got not only one of those guys, but also one of the two best pitching prospects in that class too.
Gonzo.
So yes, yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say, remember all that stuff during the live show we said about Wilder Abreu, about the power, the good patience at the plate, and that spectacular throwing arm. Just fucking landed a trade with that on a younger scale, cheaper scale, a more fiscally responsible scale. Like Elijah, like the casual fan in me was happy, but the fantasy dynasty GM in me was like, okay, Chris Getz, I get it. All right. Dude, I don't even like college baseball, and I could watch Brayton Montgomery just play defense in right field. Like, Jesus Christ. The arm, yeah. The arm talent is there. Like, we don't even have to get to the point of him hitting 435-foot nukes on the reg. Like, let's just talk about him hitting a man in his chest from 250 feet away.
Like, cutoff.
Man, bro, when your cutoff man is the catcher, Gonzo, think about that. I love it. I love it. And I know, yeah. I know he broke his like ankle or whatever, but he got time. We got time today, cuz. So,
yeah. And I want to give a little to Brady Montgomery. Love it. You guys are singing his praises. He deserves that completely. This is a guy that, you know, is he's got that upside, right? Like, there's a lot of check boxes to check, but he's the guy you look at and say, hey, like, this guy could be a star that comes from this trade. Like, there's not a lot of times you see a trade and there's just a clear guy that's like, this guy could be a star. I think Kyle Teal is going to be a good player. Brady Montgomery has a higher ceiling, a much higher ceiling, frankly. There's definitely more question marks, but there's also like, this guy could be a legit star right fielder, which, as I've said to you guys before, I say on this on every podcast I bring up right field and I talk about this with guys. The White Sox haven't had a right fielder since Jermaine Dye, right? Like, this is a guy you look at and say, you could be the right fielder for a long freaking time. And that is ultimately a very good get. I also want to give a little love to Chase Meadroth, because this is a guy that I kept putting him in as like a third piece in a trade type of thing, right? Like, just like he is, right? Like, because when I was mocking trades, I was going through and I was like, what combination of Campbell, Montgomery, Franklin Arias, if you want to go for one of the young guys, right? But then like, who's a guy that you can add into a deal as a sweetener that actually is really fun and somebody you really want to add into a deal? And Chase Meadroth is that. I'm curious to see how his kind of offensive approach and swing will kind of play over at the next level, because he doesn't have a ton of power. There's still some question marks there with how he's going to play up. You know, this is a smaller guy, right? Probably a second baseman, could play a little third. He's played well at third in the past, but this is a guy who just spent an entire season in AAA and got on base at a 437 clip. Walked over 100 times, only struck out 71 times. A lot of doubles, a lot of hard contact, line drives, a handful of stolen bases, pretty solid defense all over the infield. Like, he could very easily put himself above a Brian Ramos or a Brooks Baldwin in terms of this organizational depth right now. Like, there's a chance he goes into spring training and he earns a starting spot over either of or both of those guys in the White Sox, or Miguel Vargas for that matter, right? Like, there's a world where Chase Meadroth has a better rookie season than any of those three guys I just mentioned. I would not be shocked at that at all. So very curious to see, you know, what he is in this system. And again, the ceiling is capped. He definitely doesn't have the ceiling of a Montgomery or a Teal, but Chase Meadroth is definitely not a name to just ignore here in this package. Just, and I think a lot of people are definitely seeing that, but I do think like, this is a pretty good get for a third piece, considering you're getting two top 50 in baseball type guys with your first two pieces.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my next point that I was going along with. Here is Morosi's tweet, emphasizing the plate discipline. Did you mention specifically it was 105 walks, 71 strikeouts, and 122 games with the 400 OBP? But the emphasis that, which I agree with what you're saying, is at some point you got to put that quality utility player and make that emphasis on, you know, making that upgrade and upgrading those utility players that are there, if they're starting or coming off the bench. Listen, we all saw what the Cubs did with Zobrist. I mean, there's times he's starting, there's times he's coming off the bench. Utility players like that, you can't go wrong with, especially when you get to that point when you're in contention. Hopefully for us, it's sooner than later, but, you know, we all know this is a process you have to be patient with and allow it to go. Not all progression is going to be linear as much as we want it to be. But, yeah, obviously the three players that we talked about, those are guys that should be plug and play here coming up here shortly. And, again, you're going to see a lot of people on Twitter that are just so, I don't want to say confused about the process of rebuilding, but maybe just because they haven't seen it done the right way that they just are.
Which is fair.
Yeah. Which is, I totally get it, but at some point here, I feel an ideology, at least with Getz, the moves he's made are the right ones to be made. It's just, did he capitalize on those moves? I didn't think he did on the Cease deal. But this is one where, and I said on Twitter that I'm not going to allow him to strike out twice on me. Right now, I was on the edge, right, going into this. I want to see what he could do with the top acid again. And he didn't fail me this time. I post on Twitter, I gave this a B+. I'm very happy with the deal. And he didn't wait too long. He didn't, you know, right off the bat, trade him right away. I think the timing was fairly fair to do it right at this very moment today. Could he have waited maybe a day or two, maybe a week later to see where some, you know, Sasaki goes or Burns goes? If they don't go to Boston, then maybe you do get a Campbell and a Montgomery because they're getting desperate. Sure, but you don't know that. You know, that's in hindsight. So to fire the deal now makes sense. Gonzalez, or before I hit Gonzalez, Justin, I know you had your hand raised. Let me know what you're thinking.
Yeah, I just want to say you could be Nick York and getting traded for Quinn Priester, or you can be Chase Madrelle and getting traded for Garrett Crochet. At the end of the day, like I said to open the show, Chris Getz, stand up and take a bow. This is not just an explosive trade. This is a trade of substance, and this is a trade, just like Gonzo said 7 seconds ago, this is a trade with an ideology and a direction. Yeah. I'm happy as a Chicago White Sox fan, not because of the players that I'm going to go see this upcoming spring, but in the next, you know, 3 or 4 summers when it's time to be playing in October. This trade is probably one of the reasons why. Everybody laugh at the White Sox for saying, you know, Chris Getz failed in the, not Chris Getz, but Rick Hahn failed in the Chris Sale trade. No, Yoan Moncada had playoff at-bats. Everything else after that is up to what either chance or secondary and third-party moves. We need to see Kyle Teal and Brayden Montgomery have meaningful at-bats in White Sox uniform, because I've seen Garrett Crochet obviously pitch some meaningful innings in a White Sox uniform. It cannot go for naught. We cannot have these kids go by the wayside.
Right.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think I think building on what Gonzo was saying, what you just said too, like, this isn't just this move. I think in general, we've now seen Chris Getz spend a year basically acquiring hitters that are not the same profile as what we've seen from the hitters in this past rebuild, in the past generation, right? Like, a lot of the guys that have been targeted have had this kind of heavier on base, smarter approach hitters with a little bit more balance to them than the toolsy guys that were chased after in the previous rebuild, right? So switching it up, seeing where things are at, I like the approach taken in general by Getz, and I think he is being intentional with the type of hitters and the type of players in general that he's been acquiring in the past year. And yeah, you never know what's going to happen with prospects, but at least there is a clear intention and mindset and logic behind these moves that we're seeing happen right now.
And the last prospect I did want to bring up was Gonzalez, which, Justin, you brought to my attention. The high velocity with that right, you know, the right-handed pitcher, he does have control issues, but listen, if you get him, if he makes it to the majors, right, and he's in your pen, that's a win. And not only is that a win, you could probably flip him too. So, like, at the end of the day, that's how you keep layering your system. Justin, I think you muted yourself.
Yeah, I'm muted as fuck right now. But that's a Bruce R. Greaterall type right there. If you want to try to mold him.
Lofty expectations.
You know, we haven't seen
Greaterall
pitch in like 2 years. But I'm just saying the species. You know,
I get it.
But yeah, the opportunities are there. You just have to make sure you trade for guys that give you an opportunity to, at least if the best case scenario don't pan out, you can at least pivot because they're a good athlete. You know, they got good velocity in the case of Gonzalez. So it's good. At least he could escape in this trade. Like, Moncada wasn't playing another position after third. You put him back in second, he's losing value. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck.
So I wanted to transition here now that we got the Sox talk out of the way. And before we have to allow both of you to go, because I know we both got lives and plans here.
I do not have a life.
Elijah, right before we jumped on, me and you jumped on a tweet about a Phillies rumor that was brought up.
Yeah.
Do you remember who it was that leaked that?
So It was Matt Gleb or Gelb, and it was Ken that I saw that retweeted it. But it was Matt Gelb who put out an article that basically said that the Phillies had included both Aiden Miller and Justin Crawford in a potential offer to the White Sox at the deadline. The White Sox basically had said Andrew Painter or nothing, which it's a weird report. I think it's a little bit hard to believe. But at the same time, it seems like at the very least, it seems like the Miller and Crawford aspect was a true offer that was made to the White Sox. It said Miller, Crawford, and young pieces. So I never really get why these proposed trades come up 6 months after. Like once the deal happens, now it's like, oh, the Phillies made this offer 6 months ago. And it's like, okay, hindsight's 2020. It's cool to think about, but at the same time, it's kind of like, okay, why is this coming up right after he gets traded? Like we're seriously gonna wait all this time and then say, oh, but the Phillies offered this, just trying to gate the excitement of this trade almost. But it is worth considering what that deal would have looked like from the Phillies, because I do think even till the last minute, Getz said there was five teams involved. I can pretty much guarantee the Phillies were one of those teams involved still. I think they were probably always the second or third most likely team to make this deal behind the Red Sox.
Yeah, I felt they were right there, but I felt like the Mets were right behind the Red Sox. But at the end of the day, though, both teams, Boston and Philly, both of them made the deals at the trade deadline, start those conversations
right
to later on come back to, and I felt like they probably did. But the question is did that include Caba or Tate?
Right.
Now, if that's the thing, though, if they did come back around and offer one of those two, then that's a different story. If they were, a part of Miller or not, or was it Caba and Tate and just not Miller?
Sure.
It's bouncing back and forth.
Yeah, but it's hard.
At the end of the day, if it's Tate and Caba, I'd probably, I'd take the Boston off.
Right, still. Exactly. So
it was Miller and one of those two, then you're okay, well, then I would be sided on the Philly side of it.
Right, exactly. That's why it's hard to look back at and say, what would you have done? Because I think I love Aiden Miller. I'm a big Aiden Miller guy. I think Aiden Miller is probably a better prospect than either a Teal or a Montgomery ultimately. But what was it with Miller, right? Because I don't love Justin Crawford. I've never been a big Justin Crawford guy. I think he's at best a third outfielder in terms of his upside, right? So I think you're looking at a situation where it's like Miller, if Tait or Caba were in with Miller, then it's like, okay, that deal I might prefer actually in terms of upside to this Boston deal. But if it's just Miller, Crawford, and a few flyers, I'm pretty content with this Boston deal in that case. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't mind Crawford being involved in that. It's not enough. But yeah. I want to transition not only on that, because I saw, I think it was Bartolo's account, that knockoff account posted.
You talking about the Bartolo's colonoscopy?
Yeah, that account. He posted, would you trade Luis Robert Jr. if you added a pitching, to enhance the deal, if you include a pitching prospect in it, would you do it? And I feel like absolutely you would do it, but
what if they threw in Campbell? Thrown in Luis Robert if the Red Sox would have thrown in Kevin Campbell?
Christian.
Let's do it right away.
Really? Really? So yeah. You think straight up Christian Campbell worth Luis Robert?
I don't think
in terms of value.
Campbell, I would. Straight up, I absolutely would.
I think you gotta be a little bit more.
How many seasons has Luis showed that potential?
Doesn't Two. Matter. I know it's there.
More than zero. Two's more
I
than
know
zero.
It's there. I know it's there.
It's there, but it's really one full season or one season where he's went over that threshold.
He's still the best super threshold organization.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, how many chances are you going to take on this?
He's only what? He's going to be 27 this summer or what?
Well, on the birth certificate, right?
Come on, bro. Don't do that, man.
I mean, it's not a debate at this point. There's so many accounts of this that's a question, still
you make
a question.
Me sick.
So would I do it? Yes. Because I still think, if you add a Campbell and you just go back to Luis and whatever prospect of pitching that you're going to get more in that deal than any other deal. So,
yeah. I don't know.
It's he doesn't match the window for me. So I'll still take that piece that would be in the window.
Yeah. What happens now with Luis, and then I got going here in a sec, but what happens with Luis is it's like you're making two decisions now. You have two options with him. You trade him this offseason for a lower price than he probably ultimately is worth. You're not going to get appropriate value for Luis Robert. The way he was playing this season, the injury risk, right? Like, you're not going to get the proper value for a high upside center fielder that has 3 years of cheap control, right? Like, that's just not going to happen because of the market, because of the way he's played, because of the injuries, right? So you either trade him for less than he's probably worth and you get one good prospect, probably a second decent piece, and you call it a day. It's okay, depending on the player, like, okay, sure. Or you take the risk that he has a really good start to the season or a good full season and you trade him at the deadline or next offseason, right? But that comes with the risk of, like, if Luis Robert is hurt in the first half of the year, immediately, if he doesn't play much and he doesn't play good, then you're trading him for even less, if anything, come deadline, come next offseason, right? So you've got two ways to go with it. And I think it's just going to come down to how much risk Chris Guest is willing to take.
Right. And we're going to see, because I think the move is to start this negotiations like they did with Crochet. Start the negotiations now, allow it to go into the season for the trade deadline.
It's kind of what I said.
Again, you said there's risk regardless, but at the end of the day, if you're offering me a package, which originally I said you don't do that package. Putting them together, right? But if that situation with the best, in the best sense, with Boston, with the value of position players that they have, I would do it because I feel like I wouldn't get that later. And especially Campbell. It'd be hard to find a better.
I want to ask you one possibility, Gonzo, because I'm curious. If the Phillies call, Dave Dombrowski calls, because that's the team that I think is by far the clearest option for Luis Robert. If anybody's going to pony up and actually trade a decent deal for him, I think he's the best offer. If the Phillies call and say Eduardo Tait and Justin Crawford for Luis Robert today, are you doing that?
Do I have the Campbell still on the table?
No, Campbell's not on the table.
Oh, shit. So Tait, but then I did this deal, so I would have three catchers then, right?
Yeah, but Tait's 18. Crawford. His positional doesn't matter at 18 years old.
Yeah.
You're betting on the bat. Or Caba, for that matter. Caba and Crawford, sure. Either Caba or Tait, they're about a similarly regarded prospects, I would say, at this point. They're both 18. They both have a lot to go. But
I'd probably go Caba at this part.
But Caba and Crawford, are you taking that? Because, again, that's not a terrible deal. I'm not upset about that, but I don't feel great about it. I don't look at that and say, oh, that's great. Like,
so,
I don't, yeah.
So you know? What about I probably Naylor would take and it, Caba, and you add a little bit more if you're the White Sox?
Who in Caba?
So Aiden Miller and Caba.
Oh, no chance. No chance the Phillies do that. The Phillies are not trading Miller for Luis. I don't see any world they trade Miller.
No, I'm saying, like, let's just say conversations are on the table, but the White Sox got to add a little bit more.
What are the White Sox adding that's valuable? Who do they have that's worth anything?
Damn.
I mean, I don't mean to be that way, but, like, who are they adding that's worth anything other than prospects who they're not going to trade at this point?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess you maybe sell one of your pitching prospects, but the Phillies don't need a pitching prospect. They need to win now. They're not interested in prospects.
So Luis, like, Robert and Davis Martin wouldn't get it done.
No, I don't think they trade Miller. I think Miller would only be on the table in a Crochet trade. I don't think there's any world they trade Miller for Robert, honestly.
The only reason I ask is because they've been shopping around Alec Bohm the last couple of weeks.
Right.
I'm thinking, like, is Aiden Miller the heir apparent? If so, his price tag is through the roof.
He's not yet, and that's the thing. He's still too young, but he will be their third baseman come 2026 and beyond, I think. I don't see any world where he's not their long-term guy there. So it's. I don't think they trade Miller. I really don't think the Phillies – I think the Phillies are in a spot right now where they – want to hold Painter, they want to hold Miller, and they're going to be fine trading anybody else for any given deal. Like, they like Tait, they like Caba, they like Crawford, whatever. They're going to hold Miller, Painter, and everybody else can go, basically. That's the way I look at the Phillies right now.
Okay. Anyways. One last thing before we wrap this up. Let's talk a little Roky Sasaki. Because, hold on, I mean, we're going to laugh at the thought, but it's honestly, if you're Jerry, right, with Roky's age, right, if you get him in the league, allow him to adjust to the MLB for the next, let's just say, 25, 26, 27, right? And for his age, that's going to be – he'll be age 26, 27 going into 2027. That's the prime years, and that's probably around the year it'll be when you're probably next in contention. He fits that window. For me, I would – and the revenue you can get from him, I would seriously consider – making him that first $100 million when the time comes. Well, that's at the very least. Now, I feel like you obviously, I know, Caleb, you're saying no chance. I get it. I'm just saying the fact that this isn't like last year where, like, Otani, he immediately shuts the idea of even pitching and, you know, being throwing a pitch at him. But for the fact that right now he's making that consideration to go throw the pitch in, that's absolutely what you should be doing, especially with an asset like Sasaki. So I get it. Like, realistic, it's not going to happen. But same time, I'm just happy the thought is there for this current situation. And, I mean, whoever's going to get him, the kid's going to be a stud. But
yeah,
I'm just happy that they're throwing that pitch in, and it looks like it's a professional pitch.
I will personally buy both of you a Roki Sasaki jersey if he signs with the White Sox. I think there is a higher chance of – I think there's the higher chance of the White Sox winning the World Series in 2025 than Roki Sasaki signing with the White Sox. That's what I'll say. I appreciate your positivity, Gonzo, and you're not wrong at all about the logic of it. I just think there is zero world in the universe that he doesn't sign with a contender, because the playing field is evened by money because of this restriction of him being international signing as opposed to a free agent signing, right? So he can only sign for up to whatever $7 million international bonus, right? So he's going to be essentially getting paid rookie amount of money for a superstar coming from Japan. If he doesn't sign with a contender, something is weird and off and doesn't make sense.
I'm not saying, like, this is a legit shot.
No,
I'm
just saying
the thought process of this should be legit. Like, this, the fact that they're making that pitch, there's a reason for it, and it's because of that long-term approach to this that it's legit. Like, that's something you should be doing. So, yes. Put here in the chat, and everyone's talking about the money. Like, we get it, but at the same time, like,
dude, I'm literally gonna
it's cry. Not it's not how at, that works
at the same time. Like, Jerry, what was that tweet out there like a month ago that how much money the Sox put since 2021? They're like top 10. So, like, the money's spent, it's just the previous GM didn't spend it wisely or efficiently.
He spent it on homes, unfortunately.
Yeah, so you guys got anything else on Roki or anything else?
I'm good. I'm excited. I'm glad we're in a positive space right now, because that's more positive than we have collectively been on this show the last few times I've been on here. So it's fun.
Dude, yeah. We've been grumpy on the blackout the last couple of times.
I know. So this is good. I'm
glad we could just.
Seriously, I agree. I appreciate you guys always welcoming me on. It's always fun to talk about these prospects and the
this, future, sure. Quick shout outs. Justin, give me a shout out.
I got to give a shout out to you guys. Fantasy football has dominated my life. All I do is go to work and set my fantasy football lineup, talking baseball with you guys. And I talked with Ray and Mac and Asna and the other night. Baseball is back, gentlemen. The winter meetings are here. They're gone. Soto has signed. We're back to work. All right. We're back to fucking work. So I got to give a shout out to Eli. I got to give a shout out to Gonzo. Ozzie Jr., Slavko Bekovic, because we are back. You thought you could escape the White Sox. No. The White Sox are back. Thank you, guys. Thank you for bringing baseball back. And my cat wants to say thank you. Say thank you, Talisa. Nah, whatever.
I don't know what I just watched, man. Shout out to both of you. Shout out to Chris Getz. Shout out to Garrett Crochet. Great guy. Did his job here. And I'm very cool to see the way he grew this past season with the White Sox, and always been a class act. The few interactions I've had with him around the White Sox stuff. So shout out to Garrett Crochet. And then shout out to, you know, just White Sox fans. Let's get some more. Yeah, burger trade. That was crazy. Shout out to just fans of the White Sox, because I know it's been rough. I know people are sad and angry and all these other feelings. But I really do think there's a path to a brighter future than what we're dealing with right now. That's all I got.
I like that. I'm glad KG put that in the chat, because I'll lead off with that shout out, actually. Not only that, I'm happy to see Berger go from Miami to Arlington, but he can now use that power and let's just say more of a competitive window. But at the same time, I gotta give a shout out to not only Jake, but the wife, Ashlyn, well, I should say the whole family. They got good news with their daughter, and there was some concerns after the birth, and we're glad to see them all healthy now. No concerns. So good shout out to Jake and Ashlyn there. Also, secondly, I want to shout out my fiance, Soraya, because she said yes.
Congratulations, my boy.
Yes, it was a great weekend in New York City. It was a great proposal right in front of the Rockefeller, or the Christmas tree, I should say, which, not going to lie, like, I knew there's going to be lots of people in front of the tree. I actually thought it'd be more people, but even with the spacing, it was interesting, because as soon as I got down the knee, you know, all the phones were coming out from all around, so added more pressure, but and the day I got the job done, we got a yes. We came back. We watched the Blackhawks beat the Rangers the next day. It was a good weekend in New York City. Last but not least, Elijah, thanks for popping on with me.
Always
very
been.
Very last second. I know I sent you that text as soon as I got off the flight after the news. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to our whole analysis on the Garrett Crochet deal. And we will be back with emergency pods if we get any other news coming up shortly. If a Robert or
more Red Sox trades, please,
or Benintendi gets dealt, we will be here to analyze it. And hopefully we do get some more news, because we need, like you said, Elijah, that the farm system is getting more higher and up there with top, what was it? They got six in the top 40, was it?
Six in the top 50 right now in pipeline, but
yeah. So end of the day for me, thank you, Chris Getz. You finally got me off the ledge here, because I was really concerned on where this was really going to be headed. Because again, with that lack of experience, there's a lot of question if he could pull those deals off, and he proved that he did. So yet to be seen. We still have to keep them on the field, develop them, but the talent is there. So thank you for everyone in the chat for tuning in and following us. Thank you for watching the Blackout Show.